Right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now. Did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. This episode is brought to you by Mira, Ember Wave, and Yoga Sleep. We are happy to have them on board making this show a possibility. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin.
And we're your hosts.
We sure are.
I am a lesbian.
So gay.
We need to tell our story.
It's not your nuclear family anymore. It's not just your mom and dad thing.
We're not ruining these little humans.
Not for the gay reason. Just because we stay.
Oh, here we
Hi, guys. Here we are back in our caves, in our new
normal. Back in our recording cones.
Yes, and I actually made my own cone. I made a fort.
She did. If you could see her, guys, she's just under a sheet with her arm up in the air, holding it because it just keeps dropping on top of her. It's amazing.
Oh my God.
It's
you see how hairy my armpits are too? Because my razor is a thing of the past in this COVID-19 time. Oh my God.
That's a lot of personal information right there, Jamie.
I actually had a dream. A dream that my leg hair had turned blonde and downy again like it was when I was 8, and I was so happy.
That's an oddly specific and weird dream. I wonder what that means.
I'm having the craziest dreams. I also just dreamt last night that I was in a Broadway show that Rosie O'Donnell was producing, and we were on her couch trying to figure out what to do during COVID-19. It was a thing. It was anxiety.
Well, this is our new normal, right? We're still at home. We just made it through week 2 of homeschooling. And I don't know about you, Jamie, but I want to just say this. Week 2 is where the wheels fell off. Like, week 1 was great. It was all new. We were all like creating a schedule. We were all like, look at us, look at our commitment to family fitness hour. And it's like, and then week 2, all of a sudden my son, who had been so amazing, was just like, on Wednesday, he just broke down into tears. Mm-hmm. And I was yelling, like I was in the words of the kids are all right, I was definitely not being my highest self. And I realized though that like my kids are 8 and 10, and because they're getting all the schoolwork via Google Classroom, I was just taskmastering. I was just like, you know, like you have 7 items, you got to get through those 7 items. And I think it was so much pressure on them. And I realized the way they learn in school is like teachers being all fun and funny and you know, like there's puppets and crap. Yeah. And I was just taskmastering. Mm-hmm. And they're 8 and 10.
Oh, my
and
God.
It was too much.
No, tell me about it. This isn't fun.
Yeah. Well, you know what we did? Another mom friend said, hey, we had that happen yesterday. I threw the schedule out for the day. And so I did. I threw the schedule out. He lit up. Mm. I just said, the only thing is at some point today, you do have to finish your today's homework. So he did that. And he came in from his little outdoor, like going out and playing by themselves outside. And he came in and he said, I felt so heard. I was like, oh, my God. I was like, what 8-year-old says I felt heard?
Yours? We did the opposite, actually, because we had been getting lenient, more and more lenient with the schedule last week a little bit. We were just easing off a bit. That Monday came around and we were like, oh, that was a shit show.
Yeah,
and we had to tighten up a little bit more. So it's, you know, it's
like a constant, like riding the meter, like an audio meter, like just trying to make sure it doesn't go into the red and it doesn't, you know, like, but we took all bets were off on the weekend though. Like my kids watched way too much screens yesterday and today.
Oh my God.
And I can't care. There's so much going on.
You know, my worry is like your kids are a little older and my 2-year-old is getting way more screen time than he would normally.
It's not forever though. This is not a forever thing. I feel like we should just all ease off on ourselves during this time. And like, you know what I mean? If they get a little extra screen time, so be it. That's my opinion.
It's hard. So what are we doing? What are we doing to get through this? You know what I did?
What'd you do?
So I saw while I was scrolling through my Facebook as I was laying in bed before falling asleep, as you do.
Yeah, at 8.
Yeah, exactly.
As I do.
Exactly. I saw this piano app that was having a super, super discount, learn the piano. And there's a piano in this house I'm staying at. I have always wanted to like really delve into the piano. It was $30 for something that's usually $200. So I got it.
Amazing.
I got it. I started it yesterday. I am already playing songs. This thing is amazing.
Jimmy, play us a little something right now. Okay. Quick.
I'm going to. It's a social distancing ditty.
Okay. Play it. Jamie, that was truly, that was something else.
I'm super proud of you. This is good stuff.
All right. Well, before we get to our guest intro, I believe we wanted to remind everybody that you can still, even though we're in the middle of a pandemic, you can join our Patreon community. You're going to get all kinds of bonus content and videos and swag for joining. It's all there if you just head to patreon.com/ovaries talk.
If you're looking during this time, I know I am. Looking for like small businesses to support. Like we're going to order takeout tonight because we want to support like restaurants around us. If you're looking for other small businesses to support, we're around on Patreon.
We're a small business.
And we're a small business if you didn't know. And we want to keep this thing going. We really do. So, you know, you can always check out our Patreon and become
if you're
one
able
of our
to.
Community.
There's a lot of people in a lot of hard positions. So you know, if you're able to, for God's sakes, don't even, you
for
know.
For God's sakes.
For the love of God. All right. Let's talk about Allie and Jen. Let's talk about our guests. We have an episode, Jamie.
I love these ladies. I love what they're doing.
They're moms. They're activists. And they started a company called Our Shelves, which is a book box service that curates the best of children's books featuring diverse characters, LGBTQ books for our kids, folks.
Yeah, it's one of those book boxes that is totally, totally about diversity. And it's what I've been wanting. And it's what I've been waiting for. I am so excited to talk to these ladies. It's such a wonderful idea they had. I can't wait to talk to them. Let's just do it.
Let's do it. Let's hear their interview. Allie and Jen. Is it Jen or Jennifer?
Jen.
Would have been funny if you were like, actually, it's Jackie. Hi, guys. Welcome.
Thank you.
Where are you? What state are you in?
We are in Maine.
In Maine.
Lovey.
Is it freezing in Maine right now?
It is cold. I'm not going to lie. It is cold today.
Well, let's do this. It's time for us to ask you to give us the 30-second elevator pitch about your family. Are you guys ready? Who's going to do it?
I'm getting my timer.
We are ready. You ready for me?
Okay, yes. Okay. I'm gonna start the timer. On your mark, get set,
go. Yo. Our family began when I saw Allie's big blue eyes from the back of her friend's car in spring of 2001. We were married in a library in central Baltimore in 2011 before friends and family, and we legally married in January 2013, days before our Anna was born of Allie, but delivered by me on the side of the road out the door of our gray Subaru. We welcomed Isaac last year in a regular hospital. Our family is fun.
Go ahead.
Did I just get buzzed off?
Yeah. You did.
But
you
that's can, okay. But
finish
going.
It. Finish it. It's good.
I would say that our,
you got buzzed.
Our family is fun, kind, and try to be very present. And at this point in our life, we feel fiercely committed to sort of ensuring our family is represented across all kinds of media, particularly in the books we're reading to our kids at night.
Ooh.
That's a good elevator pitch.
Very good. And so many things to dig into.
I know. We have to start with, I don't know, a baby on the side of the road.
First, I want to say I was married in a used bookstore, so we have something
in common. Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Yeah. Where? What town?
In New York, in Manhattan.
Cool.
In the Housing Works bookstore. All of the proceeds go to HIV research and assistance.
Wow, that's amazing. So, that's so cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you mentioned a little bit about how you made your family. Can you give us an overview on that? And please go in depth on having a baby in a car on the side of the road. Please go into depth on that.
All right. Well, Allie was the most calm person having a baby I've ever seen. She was on the treadmill about 6:30 and said, oh, something feels a little weird. So it was enough for me to write it down. And then by about 9:30, it was clearly game on. And she was so zenned out in the tub, really just doing what she had planned to do in her birth plan. And I was, you know, diligently sort of timing things, but kind of missed it because it got to be like 2 a.m. and she let out this blood-curdling scream. And I was like, well, I guess we probably should go now. And got in the car, you know, in downtown Baltimore where we lived. And I went by a few hospitals on the way to our hospital. And I was saying, okay, do you want me to stop? We can go to these other places. And no, we wanted to make it to ours. So we're getting off the exit. And Allie goes, I can feel the head.
Like, I was literally propping myself up on the seat. Like, I'm doing it right now in this chair. Like, my hands were below me, and I was propping myself up because I could feel Anna's head coming out.
So I feel over there, and I've delivered a few babies in my day, but not
as
something
you do.
I do every day. And I feel over there, and I don't feel the head. So I'm like, all right, it's about 3 miles from the exit to the hospital. I say, should I pull over and call the police? No, we're just going to try to make it. So I am busting ass through the lights. It's snowing a little bit. And we get to the hospital, and then Allie says, okay, I definitely feel it now. And I look, and her head is she's basically crowning in the car.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
So I run.
Oh, and do you remember the nurses come out?
Oh,
the nurses come out with the wheelchair, and they say, okay, get into this wheelchair. We're going to wheel you in. And I was like, no, you don't understand. The baby is here now. I can't sit down. I'm going to squish her.
So I remember putting down the parking brake and putting the seat back and helping Allie get into position. And this nurse, Paulette, I'll never forget her, finally takes a look, and she goes, ah, shit, this baby is coming. So Allie put up her foot, and I said, I thought with one big push that was going to do it. So I just reached in there, felt Anna's shoulder, and just said one, and I just pushed down, and Allie gave one monster push, and she came right into my arms, screaming, big blue eyes. Fine. She was fine.
Holy cow.
And the doctors was right inside the doorway. And for me, I felt so responsible that this had happened to Allie. I was supposed to be watching. And Allie really didn't want any intervention. You know, we wanted to do the best we could to avoid that. So I think for Allie, it was a perfect birth plus 10 minutes. Would have been better. But
wow.
It was nice. Yeah. And it fit. It fits who Anna is. It fits her personality. You know, when she's ready. She is ready, and she was ready.
That's amazing.
And she came.
I feel like we should clarify for our listeners that, Jen, you are actually a doctor. You're a cardiologist, correct?
Right. So I had probably participated in medical school in maybe a dozen births. So if this ever happens to listeners, there's no room up. So you just reach in there, you try to push down, get a little more space, and it's all about that anterior shoulder getting out.
Or just don't try it at home, guys.
Or maybe for your listeners at home, maybe...
Or just leave a little earlier.
I was going to say, maybe for the listeners at home, stop at that hospital that you passed the first one. How about that?
And then, you know, we got home and there's like a little bit of blood on the floor, and laying in the blood is my list of timing. And she was every 2 minutes for like an hour.
Whoa.
And, well, there it is.
There it is.
Yeah, maybe that would have been the time to
And
go.
We don't know why. We don't know why Subaru hasn't asked us to be on a commercial yet, right? Like, we should be on a Subaru commercial. That was a Subaru car.
It was a Subaru? I mean, that's like so lesbian.
I know, right? We should be in those love commercials.
We're going to pitch Subaru when this episode comes out. We are going to make a full court press towards Subaru because you should be in a Subaru commercial. That's absurd.
Subaru helped our baby get born.
Yeah. Also, you need to let, since Jamie and I are both actors, can we be in the commercial as well? Can I be the nurse? Can I be the nurse? I can say it. Oh, shit, this baby's coming. Jamie, you can be like the one who puts her in the wheelchair. I get the line.
That's amazing. Hey, Robin.
Yes, Jamie.
You know, we've got a lot of listeners who are trying to get pregnant or are thinking about starting the process. I think we should tell all the folks at home about Mira.
Yes.
Yes, because Mira is the only fertility tracker that measures your actual fertility hormone concentrations and shows your unique hormone curve.
Jamie, tell them how Mira helps track the ovulation.
I would love to. So unlike other fertility trackers, Mira measures actual fertility hormone concentrations with 99% accuracy, which is great.
Amazing.
Yes. And it comes with this cool fertility analyzer that syncs your results directly to the Mira app, which you put right on your phone. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to manually track.
Oh my God. I love that.
I do too.
You know what else I love about Mira and I think is so cool is that by tracking your unique hormone levels throughout your cycle, Mira learns your cycle to personalize your ovulation prediction. And because Mira analyzes your actual hormone levels, it gives accurate insights on fertile windows for those with irregular cycles and PCOS.
Oh my!
I mean, that would be critical, right?
I could have really used this when I was trying because, you know, I'm not the best at keeping track of things on my own.
It's true, you're not.
And my cycle was so irregular. It would have been nice to have a tracker that took my unique cycle into account.
And Mira also helps you achieve your fertility goal, whether it's trying to conceive, you know, learning about your cycle or trying to avoid. And listen, that's probably for our heterosexual allies out there. I mean, us LGBTQ folks are not too worried about avoiding.
If only. This podcast wouldn't exist then.
I know.
Anyway, you guys heard it here. Order your Mira starter kit online at miracare.com with promo code OCT and get $25 off.
That is amazing. Yes. The Mira Fertility Analyzer and app take the guesswork and stress out of ovulation tracking. So don't forget to order today with exclusive promo code OCT. That's miracare.com. And then you're going to use the promo code OCT.
Do it.
Check your eggs, ladies.
So tell us, guys, can you talk about donors? Like, how did you give us an overview on that? Like, how did you choose?
Your family? Your babies?
Yeah. So we did IUI, right? That's what it was called? IUI. Mm-hmm. Yep. And we got an anonymous donor from the Sperm Bank of California. Mm-hmm. So the donor's anonymous, but the kids can learn who the donor is when they turn 18. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny. Our different personalities definitely played out in the donor selection process. My kind of type A lawyer, you know, color coding of the donors was, you know, happening in full force. And it was quite funny. So we narrowed down to two donors. And, right, they're supposed to be anonymous. But one of them was a cross-country champion from Washington State and a twin who looked like one of the characters on Star Trek, all per his, you know, profile. Uh-huh. And so we just Googled, we thought it would be funny. So we just kind of Googled Washington State cross country twin champion and we found who it was. So we didn't go with that one because that we decided we didn't want to do that.
This kid looked so much like Patrick Stewart. It looked like Patrick Stewart. So it was the bald guy on Star Trek. So the way he described himself made him very easy to find.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy.
And it wasn't, we didn't have anything against him. We just preferred it to be anonymous.
It feels like dishonest too, right? Like if you already know who he is, when you're not supposed to know who he is, it's like some taboo thing that you're breaking. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it would be very difficult to not keep tabs on him, like be checking on his Facebook page. Although my kids have different donors. Because my first donor, my daughter's donor, was out of the program. And somebody in the second group, my son's donor, found the guy and shared it with all of us. And I was really, I had feelings because I thought it was a conversation like maybe another 10 years from now, if he chooses. I wasn't prepared to have a face and a name and see this guy's LinkedIn profile. I just wasn't ready for it. And some people have started a relationship with him in another group, and we haven't, because I don't want to.
Yeah, I think we felt similarly. We were comfortable with our family type, and the sperm was another ingredient at that point. And that's what the role we wanted the sperm to play, and not more than that at that point. And as you know, at 18, they can learn who the donor is. But yeah, I think we felt the same way, that anonymous felt more comfortable.
Yeah.
So pretty easy pregnancy with your first?
Or easy
The birth was easy. Yeah. Was it easy?
Yeah, it was pretty easy. I'm trying to think. I think it was probably 3 or 4 times. We didn't do hormones the first few times, which I think after doing it a few times and feeling, I didn't anticipate feeling such disappointment.
Mm.
And then I was like, okay, yeah, just give me whatever you can give me to make this happen.
Right.
So then we did the hormones, and then I think we did 2 rounds with the hormones, and then we got pregnant, and the pregnancy was pretty smooth. I think it was pretty typical, you know, some sickness, ate a ton of ice cream. I remember eating a ton of ice cream until I got that diabetes test result back. And then I stopped eating ice cream. Yeah, I got caught through that diabetes test.
Oops.
And then, and then there was the birth that we talked about.
Oh my God, amazing.
And then you waited a little while. What are they like? How many years? 5 years apart?
Almost 5 years before we were ready to go back to bat.
Why the long wait? Did you not know you wanted to? Had you talked about to?
So when we had Anna, Jen was a medical resident working 30-hour shifts.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a lot. And then we also moved on top of that. About 6 months into having Anna, we moved from Baltimore to Philadelphia. And I think between Jen working really long hours and new baby, first-time baby, and the move, that was a lot. And so we decided, okay, for baby number 2, we're just going to wait until we get settled. We knew Jen had to finish her training program in Philadelphia. So that took 3 years. And then when she finished that, that was the time where we really said, okay, where do we want to live? Where do we want to be? Where do we want to raise our kids? We moved to Maine, got settled here. And then we were like, okay, we're ready. We can handle this. And then Jen was excited. And then Jen carried Isaac.
Oh. With Jen, with your own egg. So both of you used your own egg in your own bodies. Obviously,
that's right.
It wasn't
same donor
time,
so. We each carried.
Oh, so had you bought up a bunch of the donor sperm, like when you had your first?
No, but we would call once. I would call once in a while just to see like what was in the donor pool.
Smart.
And kind of try to stay ahead of it, because it was a tough process, you know, going through that first selection. And
yeah,
I wanted to not go through that again if possible.
Yeah,
for us.
Yeah, we lovingly call that search the search for Superman, because you get crazy picking out who it's going to be. So yeah, you don't want to pick another person once you've found your person. So lucky you got to use the same one. That's great.
One of the things I think that also factored into that time was I wasn't sure if it really mattered to me or not to carry.
Mm-hmm.
And that took a little working out. And I had this remarkable friend who is trained in sort of a German model, where they have this person who's sort of in between a homeopathic provider and a full medical doctor. They have some training, and really helped me sort some of that out. So when I felt ready to sort of fully move forward with carrying, and that was really a really good decision for us, for me.
Oh, great. And so how old were you when you finally started trying, Jen?
Let's see. I was 38.
Okay.
I think it took 3 times.
Wow.
We went white right for Clomid and IUI and ultrasounds.
Right, of course.
Yeah, we were very fortunate. Very fortunate.
How is the age difference? Like, you were out of diapers, you were out of, like, I mean, you had a 5-year-old who was in, presume, almost kindergarten. Like, how was that to go back to having an infant?
I mean, it was kind of funny, because it was like just as it's starting to get easier.
Yeah.
Not that it's ever easy, but just as it was starting to get easier, we decided to start over. But I think for them, for Anna, it was sweet. Anna, who's the oldest, she wished for Isaac, and then Isaac came, which was a really great frame for her. And she's just at a stage where she's much more maternally oriented in a way that she hasn't been, like in a caring way. Like, she just, she was never really into caring for baby dolls and things like, you know, babies, didn't really find them interesting. But in the last few years, amazingly, before Isaac came, you know, she was getting more to that place. So I think for our family, not only did Jen and I need to get to a place where we were ready, but I think for Anna, the age difference really worked, has been good for her too.
That's great. My daughter still does not have those instincts yet.
And her brother's been there for 2 years.
Definitely not happening a few years ago.
From my point of view, it's a little bit of an entertainment problem in that you have two kids with really different needs. So in some ways, they behave like two only children. Mm-hmm. So by the end of the day, I'm like, show is over, guys. Like multiple streams of entertainment going on. And we're shutting it down. So I see that as a challenge when he's so little.
Anne and I, my wife and I, we have to divide and conquer with the two because we can't take them to the same activities. So we never get to do anything together now on the weekends. She takes him and I take her, or vice versa, because they can't do the same things. And that's a little frustrating.
Yeah. I think that's true with two kids, no matter what, because my kids are close in age and we still have to divide and conquer because they're signed up for different things.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just like skateboarding this morning. Yesterday, Maxine was at dance. They're just different. And I'm like, you got that. I got this.
Yeah.
And then I'll take the cat to the vet, which is, you know.
Well,
by the way, what's a nice added bonus for your kids is that when Isaac is about 16, your daughter is definitely going to be buying him beer. So that is going to be good for him. You're welcome.
That's going to be my life too, I guess.
Oh, that's awesome.
Jamie, my new Ember Wave arrived.
Oh, you mean the one that you had to order because your sister took yours?
Yeah, that's the one. Listen, I don't even care that I had to pay for another one because I love my Ember Wave. Mm. It's like my lovely little bracelet that helps me feel colder or warmer at the press of a button. And it's already helping me feel more relaxed while I try to homeschool my kids. Because, you know, like things get tense, I push that button and the warmth calms my soul. So good.
So good. I'm really happy for you, Robin.
You don't sound happy for me, do you? But that's okay.
No, but I like it too. I use it on a crowded subway train because I always get a little anxious when and hot when it gets too crowded. So I push that button and the nice cooling sensation brings my anxiety back down to a manageable place. I mean, it's really amazing. It works.
Oh, of course it does. I mean, my sister, the thief, she just told me that Ember Wave was featured on Good Morning America and was named one of Time Magazine's best inventions of 2018. It's also, and the sirens outside that you hear, they are honking for Ember Wave right now.
Go
it's
Ember.
Also been reviewed by a number of leading technical publications like Wired, Fast Company, and CNBC.
Well, you gotta love that Ember stealing sister of yours. She's really great. But, you know, the Ember Wave is really legit. It really is. Did you know it was invented by 3 MIT scientists? Real deal.
No, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Huh. Well, and speaking of deals, we've got a deal for you guys, our listeners. If you want to receive $50 off your order, head to emberwave.com/OCT. Again, that's emberwave.com/OCT, and it's EMBR Wave. And you're going to receive $50 off your order.
Do it.
I mean, come on. Be cool. Be calm.
Be cool.
Join us. Join my sister.
Can we talk a little bit about the way we found you? Because Allie has this incredible organization called Our Shelves. Let's get into that.
This is so cool. As soon as we heard about you, I was like, Robin, we have to talk to them. This is great. This is amazing.
Wait,
what everybody needs.
I have to tell the story before. We had this sponsor, this other book.
Oh, yes.
Company.
And don't Jamie, say the name.
I'm not going to say the name. It's like another, but it's just a regular traditional straighty one, right? And it was one of our sponsors, though. And Jamie was like, hey, Robin, why don't we give them some feedback that they need to be doing gay books? And I was like, Jamie, they're a sponsor. I was like, I cannot tell them after they pay us for a spot that we think their business model stinks.
Think their business model stinks.
Yeah, no. Just that we were like, that you need to be more diverse. And then literally like a week or two later, your people emailed us. And I was like, Jamie, I was like, here's the solve. I was like, we're gonna do a much bigger highlight because this is amazing.
This is so cool. Okay, so tell our audience what it is because we're rambling.
We're rambling. Like we do.
Well, so Our Shelves is LGBTQ and other diverse kids book subscription service and advocacy effort with a dual mission. And I can share a little bit about how we came to the mission, but the mission stems from really observing kind of two systemic problems with the kids book industry. And this comes from a very personal place. I should even step back and say, you know, we obviously are a two-mom family. And we were really surprised when we had our daughter, Anna. We probably shouldn't have been surprised, but we were surprised when we had Anna and we started asking all of our friends, you know, what kids' books do you have that have two mom families and so many other kinds of kids and families? Because it was important for us, both through their real life experience, but also on their bookshelves, that they were having their own family type affirmed, but they were also getting having the opportunity to connect with many other kinds of kids and families. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah, we were surprised. We started asking around and we felt like we knew the people who would know these books if they were readily available. We had done a lot of social justice work around the country and people, particularly in the two mom context, I mean, a lot of our friends and families had zero books that were kind of high quality, age appropriate two mom baby books. And if they did have one, they all tended to have the same one. Mm-hmm. There were Heather a few that had moms. More than one. Well, even right. And that's even for a little bit older, but baby books, it was kind of mommy, mama, and me.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So it was interesting because on the one hand, there were all these people who seemed like they wanted these books. And on the other hand, they were hard to find. And so the two observations of the industry over 5 years of really looking at this from just an everyday scrappy parent perspective, like this was not a professional career, you know, I wasn't in this space professionally. The two observations were, and they might sound obvious, but they're important to state because they lead to the founding of our shelves. Number one, there aren't enough high quality, age appropriate, LGBTQ and other diverse kids books, period. So there just aren't enough. But number two, there are some that exist, mm-hmm. but they're much too hard to find for everyday mm-hmm. families, teachers, librarians, you know, whoever's trying to find them. And I can, if it's helpful, I can share a little bit about what we've learned about why that is. But that those two observations led to our shelves because our shelves is meant to address those two problems.
Mm. So you were just like, I'm making this business? Like, I'm, like there's books missing, so just like I'm doing it? Like,
well, so
it's a hop, skip, and a jump.
Yes, it is. In my background, I'm a social justice lawyer and organizer, so it's not necessarily an obvious space to be in, although it started becoming more obvious. So yeah, we spent 5 years trying to just cultivate bookshelves that would reflect Anna's family and our inclusive values. And so I basically ended up writing an article sharing the state of two mom and two dad families. I kept it really narrow to our personal experience, but many other people with other identities have similar experiences. But when I wrote that article, a lot of people who are working in this space, we started having conversations and we felt like the two things we needed to do, which really became the Our Shelves dual mission, one is we have to connect these books that already exist to the people who are looking for them. So in terms of why the books can be hard to find, that helps explain like why we needed to be a connector. So a lot of the books, particularly in the LGBTQ context, are being published by smaller publishers mm-hmm. that don't yes. have the marketing and distribution resources of major American publishers, or they're being created by foreign publishers. Mm-hmm. So an example of that is we had a book, I don't know if either of you have seen My Mommy, My Mama, My Brother and Me.
I think I have it.
It's a beautiful picture book. It came out last year from a small Canadian press. It's a beach story. It's lovely. It's exactly the book that a lot of people in the United States would want. But this is kind of exemplary of the systemic failure in that the book comes out, it's a small Canadian publisher, it's a beach story, and it's not even being distributed in the United States last summer. So that's people crazy. In the U.S., first of all, probably aren't hearing about it, but second of all, can't even get access to it. So we solve the problem of we go to Canada, we get the book, we become the first in the United States to distribute it, we get it to our members and supporters. So that's the first part of our mission is that connecting role. Mm-hmm. of the books that exist and are hard to find. But then the second part of our mission is the advocacy role, is advocating for the many more diverse books still needed, because that's a system failure. Like, we need many more of those books and we need them produced in America. We need major American publishers producing them, other publishers. So we have this dual mission that both addresses those, you know, those two problems.
I wanted to add one piece, just, you know, being at home, hearing about the daily things that Allie was learning as she's building the business around this issue, particularly this Canadian publisher and this book and the difficulties of trying to get it. We were at the point where I was ready to drive to Canada to pick them up. So we're literally trying to figure out, like, maybe our babysitter can have the kids and I can drive to Jackman, Maine, which is close to Canada. We were actually trying to map it out. I also say, in terms of thinking about getting publishers to do this, Allie has had so many visits with publishers in New York and Boston explaining this problem that she has detailed with deep discussion with customers, and they'll say that they can't believe that's a problem.
Right.
Which part can they not think is a problem?
Well, it's interesting. Different parts. So I was meeting with a really senior editor at a top New York publisher, very committed to diversity. And sharing just my personal story of, you know, it's so hard to find a picture book with a main character who has two moms, and particularly in which our family type is so okay that the story could actually be about something else. Like, not that the books about our family types, the more issue-oriented books, not that those are bad. They're really important. Mm-hmm. But it's also very important, but exceedingly rare, to find books where our family is just completely okay. We call those the more everyday kinds of books. Mm-hmm. But I was explaining this to the editor, and the editor's response was, well, if the book isn't about the two moms, like, what is the book about? And it was a fascinating, it was just a crystallizing moment, because I was like, it could be about bedtime. My kids avoid bedtime at all costs. It could be like a crazy avoiding bedtime story. You know, it could be about dragons or fairies or whatever. But like, our kids deserve those everyday books too.
Right.
Right. And yeah. to have someone who's kind of at a really senior level, you know, that was a crystallizing moment. That so part of our advocacy mission is that education, but also the proving that there is an enormous audience that is currently underestimated for these books.
That brings me to one thing that I thought when I heard about this. I thought, well, how long could this subscription service be? How many books are there? What is this, like, only 6 months long? You know, because I don't know that many books. But what you're saying is they're out there. We have to find them. And also, I don't have that book you were mentioning. I was thinking of a different one that I just found that I love, that you probably know of. But this is like, it's so important and amazing that you're doing this.
Yeah, it's really, so it's interesting. I mean, another reason it can be hard to find these more, what I call the everyday picture books, where the identity is not part of the issue to be addressed in the story, is we were just looking at a book. Again, it comes from a Canadian publisher, a great book, the main character, the gender isn't clear, which is great. You can read whatever you want into the main character child, and the child is with their two grandpas who are partners. So the other thing we're finding is a lot of those books, they don't get tagged as LGBTQ. So you might, just by looking at the cover, you might not be able to tell it's LGBTQ. But also, I just read an article by Mombion, a great lesbian blog, by Dana Rudolph, where she went and looked up the Library of Congress tags on that book. And the tags, it's not tagged as LGBTQ in any way. So it's really interesting. So a lot of these books, like if you look at the Amazon summary, if you look at the book jacket summary, if you look at the cover, there's no cue it's LGBTQ. And if you look at the metadata that the booksellers and librarians are using, you know, to search for certain things, like if you go into a library and say, do you have any LGBTQ books? And they go, search using that tag, these books aren't coming up. So again, like, that's a systems failure that we can't, like, I don't know if you guys know the book Little Pig Saves the Ship. It's another one of these more everyday stories, but that's another one that, for well-intentioned reasons that we can talk about if we want to, it was not, you know, put out there as an LGBTQ book. And yet the unintended consequence is that all these people who are looking for diverse kids' books and want to introduce all different kinds of kids and families, they can't find this book.
Yeah.
So we then put it in our box and it gets out there, because the negative consequence of not being able to find these books is not only that we're missing out on having those books for with our kids, but from a systemic perspective, it's problematic that these sales then underperform, because that then perpetuates what we think is a false notion to the publishers that these books are risky to produce, when they're actually not. There's this huge, I mean, we have the data. I mean, there's like millions and millions of people who want these books, but currently they can't find them, they can't get access to them, and therefore sales underperform, and therefore publishers overperceive risk.
Yeah, well, you know, I have straight friends, all my straight friends, who are always asking me, what books can I get my kids? What books can, you know, so there is a huge audience, like you say. It's not just us gays. Or queers.
It's almost like there needs to be an app or some kind of a tracking method, almost like a Wikipedia, where people can self, like, put in stuff, because it, like you said, it's systemic. It's not happening in the metadata. It's not happening in the tagging. And maybe it's because they're afraid to be pigeonholed. Like, who knows what the reasoning is behind it? But there needs to be some way for tracking. My friend Carolyn Cohagen wrote this dystopian trilogy. It's a YA book. And a friend of the author had read the first book, and the second book has a gay character and the third book has a trans character. And I was like, I didn't even know that. And it's definitely not in the, you know, in the
description.
Yeah. And it is a fantastic, it's exactly the type of book that you're talking about. It's just, it's about something completely different. and a character happens to be gay. And it is about his journey too, as a young person in a religious society that doesn't allow it. But it's not the whole story.
On the fact that he's,
so it's exactly like what you were talking about.
We have a two dad family and a two mom family in my daughter's first grade class. In the grade, they're not all in the same class. And our library at our school is not inclusive of there. I couldn't find an LGBTQ book in their library. And so I was talking to these other parents about how we should get together and we should put a list together for the librarian to get some of these books. And then one of the dads in the two dad family said exactly what you're saying. He was like, well, I hate those books. I hate the books that just focus on the two moms or the two dads. Like, I don't want a story like that. I don't want my kid reading a story like that. And what he meant was he wanted more just everyday stories like what you're saying. And when he said it, I was like, oh, God, how dare you in my head. But I totally get it. And yes, we need more stories that are just regular stories where a character just happens to be queer, or their parents are queer, or their grandparents are queer. And that's just like a extra thing that happens in the story, not the point of the story.
Yeah, it's really important. I mean, I think for all kinds of representation, it's important that it's high quality. It's important. It's age appropriate. What I share with my 1-year-old is really different than my 6-year-old. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. Like when we had Anna, the people in my world who knew how it was important to have two mom representation for our kids would give me books that included a homophobic neighbor or bullying or things like that. And they were doing it from a really well intentioned place because they know representation is important, but it's not just representation. It's high quality, age appropriate, and varied representation. So for a baby, like a baby just needs to see their family, you know, having fun and just see their family affirmed and existing and visual and explicit and not kind of hidden. Some of the books have us hidden in these little photographs. You know, it's amazing when you dig into this. I mean, this one book, which is really great. It's one of the only major American published picture books that has a main character with two moms in which there's no issue, but most people wouldn't know it's a two mom story because the only indication it's a two mom story is there's a little tiny photograph of the two mom family. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting kind of how this is all playing out. But I think both kinds of stories and many in between, you just want to have lots of kinds of representation, just like all kinds of kids want to, you know, understand what happens when somebody comes up to you and says, where's your dad? Like there's a time for that story. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just, we're trying to make the point because it's just so rare to find these everyday books that they are also very, very important.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we actually answered Jamie's question about like, what's your model for how often and age breakouts for when you ship books to?
Oh, yeah. So I'll go back. So we have a curation team that's majority people of color, majority LGBTQ that critically reviews our books.
Right on.
And then we connect them to our supporters and members through quarterly book boxes. So we send a box once a quarter and our members choose whether they want 1, 3, or 5 books in each box. And you can either subscribe, most people subscribe and then get their boxes quarterly. But we also have one-time gift boxes available.
Oh, that's cool.
And we work
with— like a good baby
shower. Yeah, we work with families, we work with schools. And, you know, I mean, it's funny, acupuncturists, home visitors. I mean, anyone who kind of has books and just want their books to reflect their inclusive values, you know, we just try to make it easier for them to get access to those books.
I'm going to send it to my school.
Oh, that's a great idea.
I'm going to send it to the librarians.
That's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, we do a lot with teachers and librarians because people are just, I mean, I think I come to this from just a really raw parenting perspective. Like, I feel like I have the realistic experience of I really have these values. I really want my bookshelves to, you know, reflect my inclusive values and affirm our family type. But it is just way too hard for everyday busy families who are lucky if they get, you know, meals on the table and brush their teeth and everyone's teeth in the house. You know, it's like, so we're trying to make it easier because it, you know, there are a lot of people who want these books, but it's just too hard right now.
I love it. And so you're also focused because you said your board of readers or what do you call your people who choose the books? You said it earlier.
Oh, the curation team. Yeah.
Your curation team. You say there's people of color. And so you're also inclusive of that too, which is
like
wonderful.
So you're bringing the diversity at all levels.
Yeah. And I will say our book boxes are, if you get the 3 or 5 book box, you're going to get queer content. You're going to get racially and ethnically diverse content. You're going to get different religions. You're going to get feminist content. We thought about doing just LGBTQ books and we decided not to for a couple of reasons. Number one, when we interviewed and surveyed tons and tons of people about this, they really said they wanted to see more broad diversity. So that was one piece. But the second piece is more than half the kids in queer families are kids of color. Our families are intersectional, and the books are not yet as intersectional as our families are. So I would feel really uncomfortable sending out, you know, just the current stock of queer books because they're much too whitewashed. They're, you know, they just don't reflect our lived experience. So for that reason as well, we kind of, when you get a three book box, if there aren't enough books that have both, you know, mixed race, two dad families, for example, we'll make sure that in those boxes, you're going to get kids of color and you're going to get multiracial families and you're going to get two dad families and two mom families as best as we can, you know, in terms of as best as what's available.
That's wonderful.
So the boxes are intersectional and we're very intentional. Our curation team, everybody has the lived experience of both themselves and their kids being underrepresented in kids' books because we believe that lived experience is really important to the curation process. And they also bring expertise from academia, librarianship, early childhood development, psychology, a whole variety of experiences and expertise that just add really important lenses to the critical review of these books.
Mm-hmm. It's really wonderful. It's really, I think all of my friends are going to want this as soon as I tell them about it.
Is for folks, is it ourshelves.com? Is that where folks can find out more?
Yeah, they can go to ourshelves.com. And what's exciting is when you sign up for Our Shelves, you're not just gaining access to these really thoughtfully curated books that reflect your inclusive values and perhaps affirm your family type if you do have an underrepresented identity, but you're also being counted in our advocacy because what we're ultimately trying to do with publishers is to be able to say, we don't just want to advocate and ask the question, you know, will you produce more books with, for example, gender fluid main characters or two dad families or two mom families or families with a trans parent, whatever it may be, or trans children. We don't just want to ask that question, but we want to follow up that question by saying, will you produce this? And when you do, we will be here to buy X number of books. And we're trying to grow that X number. Mm-hmm. So they really shift from this perception of risk that I was talking about to the abundant outpouring that the current demand really reflects. I mean, half the babies in this country are babies of color. You know, there's over 9 million LGBTQ millennials who are growing their families and 12 million allied millennial moms who support our families and want inclusive bookshelves. These are millions and millions. But they're, as for the reasons I mentioned, they're having a hard time currently connecting these books to that demand. So the demand is underestimated. So when people sign up for Our Shelves, they're really saying, I am also counted as someone who wants these books. I'm going to buy these books. And when we go to advocate to publishers, when we get that X number, as we continue to grow that X number, we're asserting our buying power. And so they, you know, will hopefully move from this perception of risk to this perception of, wow, there is, you know, I'm going to make this book because there's opportunity here.
Oh my God, Robin. I'm so tired. I'm so tired. My two-year-old has been waking up consistently at 4:30 a.m. I need a break. You know when you texted me earlier, I was napping because I went back to sleep today. I never do that.
Jimmy, I want you to just take a breath and listen to this sound. Do you know what that is?
I do.
It's my yoga sleep sound machine. I mean, that is my yoga sleep sound machine. That you have one of those. Why are you not turning it on?
I don't know. I love that sound. I keep forgetting to turn it on. You think it would help him sleep longer?
I think it's worth a shot. I mean, what I know is that every room in my house has one and we are all sleeping fantastic. And it's because of yoga sleep.
Oh, I'm really so happy for you.
You're not, Jamie.
For all your sleep.
Once again, you're not.
But no, I do love me some yoga sleep. You know, they've been making products for over 50 years and they invented the Dome, which is the very first white noise sound machine that was ever made. I forgot how much I love that thing. I got to turn it on.
I know. Because white noise, it's a natural approach to better sleep and relaxation, which I love. Mm-hmm. You really need to just turn that thing back on, Jamie, okay?
Okay.
And also, for everybody else out there, Yoga Sleep makes products for home, travel, and baby. So they've got everybody covered in your family.
Yeah. And for all you folks at home who need more sleep like me, Yoga Sleep is backed by a 101-night promise, meaning you can try them risk-free. It's a win-win. Everybody needs to get one. We all need sleep.
Yeah, okay, GB, just take another nap and relax. Everybody else, go to yogasleep.com/OCT to save an exclusive 20% off a sound machine for natural sleep for the whole family.
That's yogasleep.com/OCT for 20% off.
yogasleep.com/OCT. Jamie, wake up. We have work to do. Come on.
You told me to take a nap.
Oh my God, not right now.
Oh.
Would you ever consider putting a LGBTQ families book written by moms in your box? Because we have
Are
a book coming
about
out.
Our book? Jamie. Jamie is 100% hawking our book right now. I love it.
Well, I will say, so first of all, I'm super excited to read your book.
Yeah,
and I feel like it's exciting because it's aligned with what we're doing. It's all about bringing, you know, different stories and different voices and different experiences that many people want to hear about, not just people who share mm-hmm. those experiences, but yep. many other people want to just, especially with the current political time we're in. I mean, people, like, one place we do have control over are our bookshelves.
Yeah.
And it is a place where we can intentionally, in a tangible way, assert and affirm our values. So I feel like I love the mission of this podcast and your book.
Thank you.
To share, you know, what a lot of people want to learn about and need to know about is super, super important. And I will say, grown-ups is further down the road. We have a sunshine box for kids ages 0 to 2 and a rainbow box for kids ages 2 to 5 mm-hmm. and a treehouse box for kids 5 to 8. And we're looking to expand into chapter books, but we want to keep, mm-hmm. you know, growing for older and older. So maybe we'll get to grown-up books. But and on the two mom front, we have had books written by lesbian moms, which is great, and hope that many more will be. I was just talking to a publisher actually in Canada. It's funny, Canada keeps coming up. We were having our conversation and they were saying, oh, we have these great books you'll love for your box. And they went through a whole bunch of them. And I said, oh, and do you have any books with LGBTQ characters? And there was that pause, which is part of the education. and they said no. So that's part of why we have direct relationships with publishers. And I said, oh, well, what do we need to do? Like, yeah. what's going on with that? Like, what can we do to solve that problem? And I was like, what's your submissions process like? They told me, you know, they generally prefer Canadian authors, illustrators. And I immediately started emailing authors and illustrators I know in Canada and said, here is how you submit your manuscripts. This person, you know, this publisher says they need more queer manuscripts. So we're also, you know, there's a lot of behind the scenes work of just trying to, you know, advocate, but also just yeah. like connect. Okay, you know, we're going to make sure we get manuscripts coming your way.
Well, I think it's really wonderful how you're matching like business and filling a need for people in terms of like the books, but then also the advocacy work behind it. So guys, are you done having kids or is our shelves your last kid?
Well, it is kind of funny you say that because our shelves and Isaac were basically born at the same time. Which is kind of funny. So in that way, I've never thought of
That's
it.
It's like this podcast. this podcast and my
oh
son
my
were
gosh.
Born at the same time.
Wow.
That's true. Funny. That's true.
Yeah. So you know how it is. Yeah. That was a lot.
I think we viewed it as there's never a good time to start a business. And yet it happens to be the same week that our second child was born. But here we go. I will answer with great certainty that we are having no more kids.
Businesses or kids otherwise.
By the way, neither are Jamie and I.
Yeah,
and
we're done
and our wives. We're all done as well.
This podcast is baby enough.
Yeah. Well, you guys, thank you so much for taking the time to share this with us because your story is amazing. Subaru is going to love you. All of our listeners are going to love our shelves. There's so much love happening.
I can't wait to give this to everybody I know. Like, this is going to be my baby shower gift going forward.
That's a great shower gift is a good idea.
Thank you. That is so nice. Well, we are so grateful that you had us on. And again, we just think your mission, what you're doing is just really, really awesome. We're huge, huge fans. So thank you for all that you do.
Oh my God, I love them.
Oh, aren't they the best?
I am going to give this box as a baby shower gift from now on.
Oh, that's a great idea. That's yeah. such a great idea. And you know what I love though? Is that it's not just that they're sending these boxes out to us, but also that they're giving the feedback to the book publishers. Like that way we can make like more LGBTQ stories will be made because they're going to be showing there's an audience for this.
Yeah. It's really cool. It's really great. It's along the same line as what we're doing. And thank you so much, ladies. Thank you so much.
I know. All right. Well, listen, everybody. Thank you for, again, we keep telling everybody we know there's a lot going on in the world right now, but we are just so happy that you're staying with us and, you know, and that we're able to just during this time put out some content to take people's minds off of everything.
Yeah. And thanks for being patient with our sound and all
yes.
of that.
In the silence.
We're doing our best.
But stay healthy, stay sane, stay yes. away from everyone.
Awake.
Away. Stay. Oh. You are really tired. I said stay away from everyone.
So let's keep this conversation going. You can join us on the social. Where can they find us, Robin?
Oh, well, that's I'm so glad you asked. Ovaries Talk on Twitter, Ovaries_talk on Insta, If These Ovaries Could Talk on Facebook. And also on Facebook, on our page, there's a community there that you can join and talk to other listeners. Mm-hmm. And of course, you can support us on patreon.com/ovaries talk. And there's going to be bonus content, swag, all kinds of cool stuff there.
And maybe there's soon to be TikTok. Who knows?
I don't know. Who can say?
Who can say?
But I do want to say this one last thing before we say thank you to our sponsors. Is like, guys, if anybody needs help during these crazy days, get help. Don't be afraid. Reach out.
Yeah, don't be afraid.
So thank you to our sponsors, Mira, Ember Wave, and Yoga Sleep. We love you guys, and we just appreciate you helping us make this podcast.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, you make it possible. We thank you.
We thank you. We thank Jamie, you all.
We thank you. Good day. I think Jamie needs a nap. Let's do some eggs.
All right, ovaries.
Nap time out.
Out.
Ovaries could talk, they would say. Eggs, ovaries, out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.